Hello and welcome to Technofunda Investing Podcast Series. This is fifth episode in our series Achieving Financial Freedom with Technofunda Investing Process. I am Vivek Mashrani, your host, and you can follow me on my Twitter handle @MashraniVivek or visit my website vivekmashrani.com. We have our special guest Gautam Baid, who is the author of the bestseller book Joys of Compounding. Gautam Baid is a CFA and is portfolio manager at an SEC-registered investment advisor based in Salt Lake City, Utah. Previously, he served at the Mumbai, London, and Hong Kong offices of Citigroup and Deutsche Bank as senior analyst in their healthcare investment banking teams. Gautam Baid is a CFA charter holder and member of CFA Institute, and in 2018 and 19, he was profiled in Morningstar's Learn from the Masters series. Learn more at www.thejoysofcompounding.com if you want to know more about his book and his journey, and connect with him on Twitter @Gautam_Baid. So Gautam, thank you for joining this podcast, and I'm really, really glad that you are here to share your knowledge, wisdom, and learnings with the wider audience who is listening to this podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Vivek.
So Gautam, without any ado and more introduction, I'll let you start introducing yourself with your background. And if you can tell us about what led you to finance and investing, that would be a great start, I think.
I was born in a Marwari family in India. And as all of us know in India, that the Marwari community is known for having business in its genes. So ever since my early teenage years, I was always fascinated by the concept of entrepreneurship, especially by the fact that once a solid foundation is established for a business, the owners don't work for money. Rather, money works for them. I did my bachelor's in commerce with a specialization in accountancy. So pursuing higher studies in the field of finance seemed like a natural extension. I did my MS in finance from ICFA University, Hyderabad, India. And later I also did my MBA in finance from Nirmal University in Ahmedabad, India. I also went on to do my CFA from CFA Institute, US. After completing my MBA program, I got a campus placement with Citibank in their Mumbai office as an investment banking analyst, where I worked for 3 years. And from there on, I joined Deutsche Bank, and I worked there for almost 4 years as a senior investment banking analyst at their Mumbai, London, and Hong Kong offices. As regards how did I get my start in the field of investing? So as is typically the starting story of many investors, I actually got lured into the stock market out of sheer greed during the final euphoric phases of a bull market. In my case, it was the 2003 to 2007 bull market in India. I still remember I had invested in Reliance Power Sector Mutual Fund in late 2007 and a stock called Ispat Steel in January 2008, as both of them were in the hot and fancied sectors of power and steel at the time. And both of them had recently appreciated sharply in a very short span of time when I first noticed them. So I just engaged in blind extrapolation of the recent price trends in them without paying any attention whatsoever to their valuations. Now, recency and vividness biases are very powerful but highly costly behavioral mistakes. Both the investments crashed 70 to 80% within 12 to 18 months of my purchase, and I had successfully gained admission into the stock markets by paying my tuition fees. Despite this bad initial experience, my curiosity and interest about the stock markets always remained very high throughout all the first 7 years of my professional investment banking career. And at that particular point of time, I realized that we just have this one single life to live our dreams. And I did not want to waste any further time doing something that I was not passionate about. I was so keen for a career shift that I relocated to the US in 2015 without any job in hand. One of my relatives, who is an American citizen, he sponsored my green card. I thought that since I'm a CFA charter holder, I will easily land a job in my desired stock market profile within a short period of time, since this particular degree is generally considered to be highly valued in the investment management industry. But as you very well know, life is not a bed of roses for those trying to carve their own destiny. I got rejected in my first 3 stock market job interviews in the first 6 months in US, but I did not give up. I was firm and adamant that I'm not going to go back to my previous field of work where the presence of perverse incentives constantly led to incentive cost bias and conflicts of interest and did not suit my personal nature. So I kept declining all investment banking job interview calls that came my way in the US, even though they would have had very high dollar salaries. At the same time, I ran out of whatever little money I'd brought with me from India. And to take care of my living expenses in US, I did not want to sell even a single share from my portfolio of Indian stocks, as I did not want to interrupt the process of compounding. And we were also experiencing a big bull market in the Indian small cap and mid cap space at the time. So I took up a minimum wage job as a front desk clerk at a hotel in San Francisco, where I used to work during the graveyard shift. Now, for the uninitiated, this is the shift that runs from 11 p.m. at night to 7 a.m. in the morning. I used to check in guests, help them with their luggage, and occasionally wash dishes in the kitchen. Now, even though it was a big struggle for me in physically, emotionally, culturally, and intellectually, today in hindsight, I highly value those days of my life, because for the first time since the beginning of my professional career, I got some free time for myself to read and learn. This was the phase during which my learning curve really took off from a tiny base. Little did I realize at the time that I was laying down these strong building blocks for compounding in my life. The pace of work during late night to early morning at the hotel was pretty slow, and I made full use of the free time to read every single article published till date on blogs like Safal Niveshak, Fundu Professor, Jana WordPress, Basit Investing, and Microcap Club, among others. And the passionate pursuit of lifelong learning had finally begun. Now, luck, chance, serendipity, and randomness have always played a big role in various aspects of my life till date. Before elaborating on that, I would like to take a moment to talk about the importance and the power of passion. I still remember during the course of those 15 months at the hotel, every single night I used to fill up and submit a minimum of 3 job applications online for a stock market profile. So if you just do the basic math, over a period of those 15 months, I must have filled up and submitted more than 1,300 job applications. Now, whenever we devote so much time to filling up those long forms, attaching our resume, and clicking on the submit button, there is always so much hope attached behind every single submission. To face rejections more than 1,300 times and still keep on going is only humanly possible if you're truly fanatic, truly passionate about what you want to do in life. Now, coming back to what I was referring to about how luck, chance, serendipity, and randomness have played a big role in my life. One fine night during November 2016, while working at the hotel, I randomly clicked on the quick apply button on a job application on LinkedIn during the course of my online job search. And wonder of wonders, I unexpectedly received an interview call for the job, and that too for a senior role in an investment firm, even though I had zero formal work experience in the stock market. And this was the phase in my life during which I was about to experience the power of compounding knowledge in action. All those hundreds of hours which I'd spent during the previous 15 months at the hotel reading all those blog articles had built a strong intellectual foundation for me in investing. This is what I was lacking during my first 3 stock market job interviews in the US. And this time I excelled in all the 3 rounds of my job interview. You see, body language derives from self-confidence, and self-confidence in turn derives from knowledge. I was offered the role of portfolio manager, and it was like a dream come true for me. And today, even after achieving financial independence, I continue to work in my job because I just love the work that I get to do every single day. And the icing on the cake is that I'm getting paid for getting to learn and improve every day. And this is how I achieved my Ikigai in life.
Yeah, great. Arun, that's very inspiring. And I think people listening here on this podcast and those who are, you know, young minds who are trying for their first job, I think really should get inspired from this, that you should not give up on your dreams and, you know, keep trying until you get that success. And most importantly, keep learning and keep improving yourself in the process so that, you know, you can achieve that excellence. Awesome. So I wanted to touch upon this concept also, Ikigai, which I discuss in my second podcast as well. So Ikigai is a concept which I also strongly believe in. And I really enjoyed reading about that in your book, right? It's awesome explanation which you have done in your book. So could you elaborate a bit more on this concept for our audience so that they get insights about this particular, Ikigai thing?
Sure. So Ikigai is a Japanese concept, meaning a reason for being, and it refers to the intersection of 4 primary elements. What you love, that is your passion. What you are good at, that is your profession. what you can be paid for, that is your vocation, and what the world needs, that is your mission. Having a strong sense of ikigai, where passion, mission, vocation, and profession intersect, means that each day is infused with meaning. It is also the reason why we jump out of bed every morning. As the saying goes, you know, when you find a job that you love, you never work a day again in your life. And here I would like to just quote a former world heavyweight boxing champion, Ed Latimore. He said, when you can use your skills to make a difference in someone's life and get paid for it, that's a happy life. When you're passionate about it as well, that's a calling. The feeling is almost divine. So this is basically what Ikigai is all about, making your passion your daily work. And then what happens is you're always in such a constant state of happiness and delight that it comes across in your conversations, in your behavior, in your mannerisms, and your actions. And all those positivity starts percolating down in various other aspects of your personal life as well. And I can vouch for this from personal experience. It's a beautiful state of being to be in.
Yes, it's a state of that flow where you don't feel like you are working and you are being it. It just happens and you are enjoying that flow overall. So I can echo with that. I also felt that many times, you know, when I'm going into that flow and really doing something which I love and I'm passionate about and which is connected to my mission. So absolutely great, Gautam. So you nicely explained this concept in very, very
simple. It is something very similar to, you know, what you're doing. You know, basically, you know, you're right now on a mission to empower, you know, all investors through Technofund and investing principles. So, you know, you've basically found your ikigai in life. And trust me, you know, like when you're conducting all this podcast, doing all these webinars, writing all this blog posts, you'll be in such, you know, this is, you won't even feel that it's actually work. You'll be in such a state of happiness.
Absolutely.
And you know, I realized that I'm doing something right in my life. The day I started looking forward to my Monday mornings rather than my Friday evenings, I'd understood that, okay, yes, finally I found my ikigai in life when I landed my dream job. So it's a delightful place to be in.
Yes, absolutely. So around your book, you know, you wrote this book, The Joys of Compounding, and I personally enjoyed it thoroughly. And I'll also share the link on my webpage below this podcast. But why did you decide to write this book, and what is it all about? If you can just elaborate for people who have not read this book.
So Vivek, our goodwill compounds when we share with others, and we should act as a funnel of knowledge, not a sponge. As Charlie Munger so beautifully put it, the best thing a human being can do is to help another human being know more. In life, the winners also lose occasionally, but those who help others win can never lose. So we should always help others rise in life. This is how goodwill compounds over time. My life epitomizes Isaac Newton's saying, if I've seen further, it is by standing upon the shoulders of giants. The Joys of Compounding is my heartfelt tribute to all my teachers who helped me achieve financial independence, become a better and wiser person, and embark on the path to a fulfilling and meaningful life. The Joys of Compounding is my story. And writing about and sharing my life's biggest learnings was my way of giving back to the investing community, from whom I've gotten to learn so much over the years.
Great, great. So it is, again, a very good feeling when we are giving back to society. And that is something beyond, you know, money and, you know, greed and everything, right? It's a ultimate joy when you are giving back to the society and people, you know, get to the next level by implementing those things, because in history we have also got benefited from someone else who has done that, right? And we should keep this ball rolling and keep this wheel moving.
I fully agree, Vivek. In fact, I would like to add something, you know, very personal here. So you know what happens when you know when a person with a good heart is empowered with a lot of money, you know, then what happens, he then starts using that money to empower other people. That is what happens when, you know, when, so for many, you know, like for, I'll share a personal story. So the first edition of this book, The Joys of Compounding, I had done, basically self-published it, and I'd spent approximately $15,000 for the total cost of production, right from, you know, edit, you know, cost of editing to distribution, logistic, everything. So, you know, that time, you know, it was just done to help people. It was just a way of giving back to the community. Now, you know, karma is like a big snowball. That's a, you know, that's something which I've talked about in my book as well. That time, I'd never expected to, you know, land this particular publishing agreement with Columbia University Press. But you know, when you do things for people unconditionally, you know, the universe works in such a way to pay you back multiple times over. The idea here is to help people unconditionally without expecting anything in return. That's the key thing. Without expecting anything in return, when you will do it with a pure heart, the universe itself will take care of the outcome and reward you handsomely. But you should not expect the reward. It's like, this principle comes from the concept of karma yoga, you know, karma yoga in the karma Bhagavad
yoga.
Gita, where, you know, basically, you know, you don't attach yourself to the fruits of your action. You just focus on, you know, the process, and, you know, just don't bother about the outcome.
Yes.
If you're doing things with a clean heart, the outcome, you know, the outcome will take care of itself. I mean, after the self-published edition, you know, became a bestseller in India and Canada last year, and became a number one release in two investing categories on Amazon USA, many publishers started taking notice. And last year, during the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting in May, I was at Creighton University, sharing a table with Guy Spire, one of my teachers, and we were signing copies of our book for the readers. And, you know, just a few hours later in that day, Miles Thompson of Columbia University Press, the Miles Thompson, he's one of the biggest names in the publishing industry in America. He came over to me and he talked about, you know, how he has been hearing about the book and how he would like, you know, me to work with, you know, with Columbia to publish a revised edition. And being a value investor, you know, this is very special. Why? Because being a value investor, I always had a quiet dream of working with Columbia University Press on a book someday. Because Columbia University is where, you know, the origins of value investing lie.
Yes.
That is where value investing originated from.
Yes.
So we value investors, you know, always have this silent dream of, you know, someday working for Columbia. And here, one more dream was being realized. So how did this happen? Now, you know, spend a certain amount of money from my own pocket as a way of giving back, because I was, you know, clear in my mind, okay, I've got far more than my deserved fair share in the 2013 to 2017 bull market in India. A lot of it was pure luck. But now, you know, now finally, after many years, now I'm empowered to help. You know, I wanted to help people in many ways, wanted to contribute to charity, but I was lacking the resources. But now I was empowered. So now when I, you know, completed all those actions, it, you know, basically paid, ended up paying me multiple times over. Now, again, this is a beautiful example of how good karma, and that's why I've written a chapter on good karma in the book. Basically, most of the chapters in the book are simply a reflection of my life, personal life experiences, and a lot of it is written from the heart. So, you know, it's just believing in all these things which I've written in the book very, very strongly. It's not, value investing is a life discipline. It's about being the most wisest and good person possible. That is what, in my view, value investing is. Money and, you know, financial prosperity are the byproducts.
Yes. So we have to first keep investing in ourselves and, you know, give back to society and have, you know, good conduct. That is all first stepping stone to value investing, rather than just investing in a stock. That is a different ballgame altogether. But first, we have to improvise ourselves and do good karma and give back to society. That is the message which Gautam is giving. Absolutely. I can totally agree on that. So I read your book personally. And as I mentioned, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And one of the questions from the first chapter, you stated that today, after having successfully achieved financial freedom through my passionate pursuit of lifelong learning, I can happily say that I am a better investor because I am a lifelong learner, and I am a better lifelong learner because I am an investor. So again, can you explain this quote and what is the entire thesis around this lifelong learning principle, and what is overall thesis of your book, if you can elaborate?
So what you just stated is the core thesis of the book. The principles emphasized throughout the book power the lifelong compounding journey of a value investor. At the same time, the learnings are not restricted to only about investing. This is because compounding does not apply only to money. Social and intellectual capital also compound. Investing in yourself, in your relationships, and in your understanding of the world pays massive dividends over time. This, in a sense, is the core message of the book, that the best investment you can make is an investment in yourself.
Yes. So I keep on saying this in some of the articles and various forums as well, that, you know, if you invest in, say, bonds or stocks or real estate, how much it can give? It can give 10%, 15%, 30%, 40%, 50% return in a year. But say, for example, if you spend 1,000 rupees on a course, and you excel in your job because of that learning, and you get that 20% promotion, you know, it's from 10 lakh rupees, you go to 12 lakh rupees, just for example. If you are investing 1,000 rupees, it's almost 200 times return you are getting just in 1 year. And that salary keeps on compounding. So if you are learning and investing in yourself, I think, as you rightly said, it is the best, payout which it can get in terms of returns. And overall, it gives you that joy and happiness, as you rightly mentioned in the other part. So
very true, very true. In fact, I've talked about this in my book as well, that an hour's time spent acquiring in-depth knowledge about an important principle pays off in the long run, and this current investment is minuscule compared with the significant net present value that results over a lifetime.
Yes.
It is akin to buying a dollar for less than 1 cent. This is why good books are the most undervalued asset class, because the right ideas can be worth millions, if not billions of dollars over time. And this applies to all this learning courses and reading all this investment newsletters, white papers. You just keep on learning. You never know when you will have that eureka moment, and it may change your life forever.
And I remember one of the Twitter quote. So when your book got published, right, I just wrote that, I've just ordered this book, and somebody wrote in the comment that, it is so expensive, it is worth 1700 rupees. And I wrote in reply that for 1700 rupees, I'm getting all the learnings which Gautam Baid has done in last 5-10 years, right? So I was telling it is like ridiculously cheap. And that is how we should look at investing in ourselves, right? So awesome, Gautam. So let's also go into another quote, which again I loved a lot, which you said that everything in life can be a teacher when you have a right mindset. For you, what is the right mindset to achieve this?
So in my book, I've talked about how books, experiences, people, everything in life can be a teacher when you possess the right mindset. Let me tackle each of these items individually. Let's start with books. So in the so as an example, during the 2017 commodity bull market, I've talked about that experience in the book, about how I educated myself on the subject by reading the relevant books. Now, the thing here is that the right book at the right time will speak to you and talk to you in a way that the right book at the wrong time just wouldn't. But because, in 2017, because I educated myself on the subject matter of commodities at the right time by reading the right books, I was able to greatly benefit from the graphite electrode boom, which happened that year, and, create a lot of wealth. Now, let's come to second part, experiences. For the first 7 years of my investment banking career, I worked as a healthcare analyst, and I covered pharmaceuticals, APIs, animal healthcare, etc. So even though I was not enjoying my job, I was still learning about the industry, and all those accumulated knowledge of the past in turn helped me. It's just a few months ago when the market started bottoming in India in March 2020, and you had pharmaceuticals and healthcare and APIs leading the rally, I was able to greatly benefit from it and participate in the rally of that particular sector because of all the past experiences in that industry in the on the beginning of my career. Now, the last one. I talked about books, I talked about experiences, and now I'll talk about people. Okay. So, let's just take you as an example. And I love learning from everyone. And I've read every single blog article published by you. I've listened to every single podcast which you've published. I've listened to and watched every single YouTube video which you've uploaded on here on YouTube. So, and you've been like a great teacher to me. So this is the mindset, which is, required. And if I could just sum it up in one single word about, what is the right mindset to succeed in life, this humility. Ralph Waldo Emerson had said that every man I meet is my master at some point, and in that I learn of him. Learning and accepting help from others creates value far beyond our individual capabilities. We should look at every interaction as an opportunity to learn from the people we meet. You will be amazed at how quickly you grow and how much better you become, both as a professional and, more important, as a human being. Let me share a small extract from my book to illustrate this important life principle of inculcating humility. The wiser we become, the more we realize how little we know. A lesser known and one of my all-time favorite equation from Albert Einstein rings true. Ego equals 1 divided by knowledge. More the knowledge, lesser the ego. Lesser the knowledge, more the ego. The deeper one dives into any field, the more humble one generally becomes, also known as the Dunning-Kruger effect. Yes. By demonstrating intellectual humility and acknowledging what we don't know, we place ourselves into a beneficial position to learn more. Thus, the dawning of wisdom. True expert knowledge in life and investing does not exist, only varying degrees of ignorance. This is not a problem to solve. It is simply how the world works. We cannot know everything, but we can work hard to become just about smart enough to make above average decisions over time. And that is the key to successful compounding.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for telling me that you have been following. I didn't knew that you are so passionate, and you have been reading my articles and YouTube videos. But thank you for that. And again, I keep learning from everyone. I have read your book and underlined your book multiple times. All the pages are now almost underlined in various formats. And I also keep learning, as you rightly said, from different people from the various aspects of my life. And sometimes even for people whom I've mentored, they give back some learnings, and they ask that, okay, can you just see how it is done? And I also get to learn from them, and they tell, you know all the things, why do you want to learn from me? And I tell them that, we all are still learners. And even if I'm writing or, taking a YouTube video, I still keep reading. I keep still ordering books every week or so, right? So the journey of learning should never stop. And if that stops, that is a very bad sign. So we should all keep learning from each other and keep compounding, as you rightly say in your book, right? And your book is like almost 400 plus pages, if I remember correctly. So there is so much to cover in your book. So let me start here. What is your favorite chapter in the book which you have written?
It's a really tough one. It's like having, asking to choose between different children, because I enjoyed writing all the chapters in the book. But if I had to choose just one, it would have to be the chapter titled "The Importance of Choosing the Right Role Models, Teachers and Associates in Life," in which I pay tribute to my parents, my role models, all my teachers. And since that was one of the most personal chapters to write, I would regard that as my favorite.
Great. It's always a gratitude to fellow, gurus and well-wishers, which takes us to next level in our life, right? So awesome. And I truly believe in, gratitude principles and being humble. And generally, when I do my presentation, my last slide is thank you. And then I write always be humble. So great. I think our mindset and thought process are matching very much. And again, in terms of Technofunda also, it is very, very rare to find someone who has written a book on value investing like you did in yours. You covered a lot of concepts around Technofunda. So to what extent do you act on Technofunda key principles of strong growth and industry fundamentals? And personally, I think it's very important to practice Technofunda as an anecdote to falling into value traps. So what is your overall thought process around this principle of Technofunda investing?
That's a good question, and it's a very important topic. I know you are a ardent practitioner of Technofunda investing principles, and you're empowering our community with your knowledge and learning. So thank you for that. And just to emphasize and explain this concept. So I invest in a wide variety of investing situations. And as Charlie Munger has said, all intelligent investing is value investing. Value investing is nothing but paying less to acquire more, right? So I invest in deep value stocks, I invest in special situations like demergers, I invest in commodity stocks and cyclical stocks, and also in high growth stocks which are trading at expensive valuations. What Technofunda investing does is it helps us basically time our entry better in each of these situations. And Technofunda basically can be summarized in four simple steps. Any stock typically goes through four stages in its life cycle. Okay. And all the Technofunda practitioners like Mark Minervini, Jesse Steen, Nicholas Darvas and David Ryan, all of talked about this concept. So I'll just talk about the four stages, and I'll also share some examples about how a stock transitions from stage one to stage two to stage three to stage four. Stage one is simply the neglect phase. This is a phase during which stocks go through long periods of consolidation. There is nothing promising or good happening in the industry, and the stock just lies in a range for a long time. It's something like what Reliance was in a range for many. Reliance Industries was in a range in India for a long, long time, and then suddenly just broke out on huge volumes and entered stage two. Stage two is the advancing phase or the accumulation phase. This is the stage at which most investors should try to get into the particular stock. Because if you enter during stage one, you'll end up incurring a huge opportunity cost if you remain stuck for a long, long time. And capital is limited, right? Capital is a very limited resource. So your money should be working as hard as you all the time. So once you, you know, once you've entered, you know, stage two, this is a stage during which, you know, the company's earnings are growing at a very high rate. And this is also the stage. Stage two is also the stage at which the deep value stock in stage one transitions into a growth stock. So this is where you get the benefits of both high earnings growth as well as PE rating. Okay, and this, and you also witness a lot of accumulations by institutions. That is where, that is the single biggest indicator of, you know, in, you know, this, those big volumes which occur at the beginning of the stage to advance, they indicate the institutional buying. And, you know, and they also tend to indicate potentially that the industry is turning around. So that is when you should actually start getting interested in this particular stock. Then you, then after a long period of rise, the stock tends to enter stage three, which is also known as the topping phase or the distribution phase. Now, as the term itself denotes, this is the stage at which the stock distributes from the stronger hands to the weaker hands, like retail investors. So you'll notice institutional holding coming down, retail shareholding going up. The stock suddenly starts to turn more volatile and starts exhibiting general weakness in its behavior. And finally, you have stage four, which is the declining phase, which is also known as the capitulation phase. So this, by this time, most of the strong hands are out. Weak hands cannot support the stock anymore. And then you have a sudden collapse on big volumes. Now, why is it important to have a sound understanding of these four stages? Because, you know, if you enter the stock at stage two, and even if you, you know, the transition from stage three to stage four has become much more rapid and much more faster nowadays. But even if you are able to exit, enter at the beginning of stage two and exit at the beginning of stage four, you still end up making a lot of money over time. If you can get out at stage three, the distribution phase, if you're smart enough to understand that large volumes are occurring on the stock, you know, without any price movement, that typically denotes distribution. But many people cannot understand, you know, and exit on time in stage three. So, but even if you can exit at the beginning of stage four, the returns which you make from the beginning of stage two to the beginning of stage four is very, very handsome. So this is, you know, this is a very practical science, and it takes a lot of, you know, time and experience in the markets, but it can be highly rewarding. The single biggest advantage of following techno fund investing is that it helps you avoid opportunity costs. Many people, you know, tend to hold on to a stock for many years, and then suddenly when the stock goes up, they tend to, you know, feel very happy that, see, my patience has got rewarded, but your capital got stuck for so many years.
Yes.
In that particular script. And this is opportunity. That's why I devoted an entire chapter in my book on opportunity costs. You know, that the people should understand that, you know, there is always an opportunity cost when you're investing, and time is a non-renewable resource, right? Time, you cannot get back time. So, you know, the, you know, more efficiently you can compound your capital, the better off you will be. So this is basically the broad summary of techno fund investing, and it'll also help you avoid falling into value traps, which I've talked about in my book as well. They are nothing but melting ice cubes or businesses with deteriorating fundamentals. In today's markets, you know, most, you know, you'll, markets have become very informationally efficient. So if you find a stock trading at a 3-5 P multiple, there's surely something wrong happening in the business or the industry. So what you, so you don't have to jump right in. You wait for, you know, you follow the techno funder principles, and you can just time your entry better in those value stocks. The, many people tend to become anchored. And what happens is once the value stock, deep value stock enters, enters stage two, it'll typically rally 20-40% in a couple of days and big volumes. And many will become anchored to the price of a few days ago, 2-4 days ago. And they feel, oh, I missed the bus. No, if it was a deep value stock to begin with, then even after 20-30% rise, it'll still be very cheap. A stock goes from 7 PE to 8-9 PE, it's still cheap if the growth prospects are brightened. So, you know, anchoring bias can be very harmful for investors. They should just focus on, you know, the intrinsic value, or, you know, what is the growth and, you know, the potential, you know, gains from the stock going forward, you know, stand, from where they're standing today. Forget the past. You cannot buy, you know, today's stock at yesterday's price, like Mr. Besson Maheshwari says. So just focus on what you have today. Live yes. in the present.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I have a very beautiful term for this stage too. I call it a Achhe Din strategy. So when company is going into good times, you just ride that good times. And when that stage four, when it is getting butchered or the sector tailwinds are not there, you just need to stay out because the party has got over. And if you stay longer, you will end up, you know, taking your drunk friends at home, and you will not end up any happiness after the party, right? So it will be bad for you. So great. So
stage Gotham. Two is the best stage, and that yeah. is the stage during which you can also average upwards if you want to. But yes. in stage three, that is when you basically stop adding to your positions. You start, you know, observing your stocks very carefully, And then you basically mentally prepare yourself for stage four when it's about to come. But
yes,
you know, you basically stop adding to your positions in stage three. You can only add to your positions during stage two.
Yes. And it is very counterintuitive principle for a lot of people who just start in the market, because a lot of us tend to, you know, just average down. When things become cheaper in price, not value, we tend to, you know, just keep accumulating it in the initial phases of our investing. But only after some years of experience, we understand, you know, that averaging up, when the business is actually doing good, we are actually getting good value out of what price we are paying, right? Because the incremental growth and the earnings is increasing so fast that the value we are getting is much more than what we are paying up. So that way, you know, averaging up is slightly counterintuitive, but it comes with time. And hopefully after listening
to those things, yeah.
After listening to the concepts from you, hopefully a lot of new investors will realize the power of this.
Both the things work. So basically averaging upwards also works. Averaging downwards also works. You just need to know when to do either of those.
Yes.
Many people, you know, just don't know when to do what. That's
yes.
the problem.
Yes.
So it's a science. You have to just practice. It's a science as well as an art. You have to just practice it over time. You'll get the hang of it.
Yes, yes. Only with experience and some of the tuition fees, as you mentioned, it will come to you. Awesome. Awesome, Gautam. So, again, a lot of things to talk about your book, and you've written so many nice things and good principles. So I'll again go to a chapter on checklist where you have, you know, you offer up Charlie Munger's checklist and how he is evaluating a potential investment. Do you use the same checklist, and what are the some nuance elements here that you want to discuss from your book?
So the checklist that you're referring to is part of my broader investment checklist. In Poor Charlie's Almanac, Peter Kaufman summarized Munger's investing principles in a checklist form, and it is a must read for all investors. Those checklist items are risk, independence, preparation, intellectual humility, analytic rigor, allocation, patience, decisiveness, change, and focus. Now, it is important to note that the ideal checklist is subjective, and it varies from individual to individual. A borrowed or outsourced checklist is not recommended. Every investor needs to build his or her own checklist based on personal experiences, knowledge, and previous mistakes. And a checklist created in this manner would be most useful. For example, as a good example, you know, all the techno fund investors, you know, should have, when they, you know, are building their screening criteria, you know, you'll notice that every techno funders investors, you know, screening criteria is different, because, you know, it's built based on, it's very personal. It's based on what has worked for them. So this is how you basically build up a checklist over time. It's very, if you do it based on your personal experience and knowledge and what suits you, it'll be most effective.
Yes, it will resonate with your own personality. So it will be more effective. Yes, absolutely.
Investing and personal finance is all personal. It's all about us.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes, absolutely. It's our mindset and how we react to situations. We have to, you know, have the ecosystem of our checklist, our, you know, systems around that, so that we don't fall into
systems,
our own
processes.
Trap.
Yep. Like Benjamin Graham said, right? The investor's worst enemy is likely to be himself. He was so right.
Yes.
Because, you know, we just, you know, because of Mr. Market, you know, playing with our mind, we end up succumbing to many behavioral biases and mistakes. If we just stick to our discipline, stick to our knitting, stick to our process, I think that is the single biggest, best thing that we can do.
Yes.
Stick to your process. You know, every one of us is different. Different approaches work. Just do what works for you. There are many ways to, you know, create wealth in the markets.
Absolutely.
But just be disciplined. That's why, you know, Warren Buffett has said that we don't have to be smarter than the rest. We just have to be more disciplined than the rest.
Yes.
You know, you look at any great investor. They talk about this one word all the time. Discipline, discipline, discipline.
Yes. So I wrote a tweet just sometime back, you know, have a system or process. Second step is just keep fine-tuning it and make sure it has the best risk reward in place. And third, just follow the system or process which you have created. So that will help you, you know, to stay on the course and be disciplined. So It's very simple, but it's tough to execute, right? We all know that investing is simple.
Simplicity is powerful. The thing is, in our industry, the problem is when things are, you know, when we give very simple advice, people just think that, you know, it's useless.
Yes.
The more simple the advice, the more people, the irony here is the more complex the advice, the more people value it.
Yes.
And, you know, and the reality is that simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. That's the most powerful construct you can have. So simplify, simplify, simplify.
So true, Gautam. So true. So again, one more thing which we generally see is in terms of algorithms, right? So we have seen a lot of algo trading and you know, system-based trading which is happening these days, or even for investing, I think there are a lot of algorithms people have started building. So what is your thought on this? Can algorithm replace human investment decisions?
Is my personal conviction and belief that as long as the perennial emotions of greed and fear exist in the stock markets, anomalies and mispricings will keep occurring from time to time. You know, just let's just think about it. Would 2008-09 have happened if markets were efficient? Would March 2020 have happened if markets were efficient? Would the, you know, crazy bull market in India in 2014 and 2017, would that have happened if the markets were efficient? So, you know, I think as long as, you know, the presence of human beings is there in the market, we'll always keep getting opportunities from time to time. We just need to, you know, be as rational as possible and just cut out all the noise. That is the way to succeed in the market.
Yes. So declutter yourself, pay attention to your processes rather than getting disturbed by external noise and information flood, which is happening, right? Awesome. So again, coming back to the lifelong learning theme, which you have overall construct in the overall theme as a book, right? So on the same note, is that investing necessitates constant learning, right? Why is this important for investors? Why continuously learning and imbibing new learning principles in investing is important? What is your thought on this?
Is very critical and important because the sectoral leadership in the market keeps changing or keeps emerging from time to time. I'll give you a very good recent example. So from the Indian market. So just a few months ago, everyone in the media and all the analysts were talking about how pharmaceuticals, APIs, gold finances, and, you know, potentially telecom will be the next bull market leader, right? Now, suddenly, you know, mid-May, then June, and then up to mid-July. Now, suddenly everyone has added rural India. That is, you know, all the agriculture-related themes like, you know, fertilizers, seeds, tractors, two-wheelers, and all the rural India-related themes have also gotten added to that. And, you know, you also had specialty chemicals before, but now you have also got, you know, all these agricultural stocks being added to the list of potential bull market leaders. Now, while I was able to participate in the, you know, rally in the pharmaceuticals and then, you know, APIs, I had very limited experience in investing in, you know, all these agricultural stocks like, you know, like fertilizers or agrochemicals. So, you know, I had to basically self-educate myself on that particular industry and sub-industries by, you know, reading up the annual reports of the last 4-5 years of the leading companies in the sector. You know, I read up as many research reports as I could on those particular companies. I also read up every single value picker thread, you know, from first to last on, you know, 4-5 companies in the leading companies in the sector. This helped enlarge my circle of competence. It's, you know, the size of the circle of competence is not important. What's important is that you learn to respect the boundaries. Now, in my case, you know, I respected my boundaries, my personal limited, you know, circle of competence. The, you know, I didn't venture outside the edges until I had built up a sound understanding of the industry. And, you know, once I educated myself, you know, through this passion for constant learning, I was able to participate in the rally in certain stocks from rural India as well. So this is why constant learning is so important. And it's so rewarding, both intellectually and financially. Even stock market is a place where you get, you know, paid to learn. And for a person who, you know, who loves learning all the time, this is the most delightful place to be in the entire world. There can be no better place in my view.
It's an ATM machine if you keep learning. So as you understand the dynamicism of the market and get adapted to that dynamicism, I think it will keep rewarding you in the right way. Awesome. And again, what is your investing experience, if you would like to share with people, that helped shape the person you are today? So more on the personality side, how you got molded and what was your overall experience around this?
This is a good question. So, you know, I'll divide it into two parts. For the first phase would be the December 2013 to December 2017 bull market in India, in which I created the bulk of my wealth. Now, what happened was, you know, since I maintain a personal journal and when I refer back to it, I realized that, you know, I got this self-realization that a bulk of my returns during those 4 years were primarily driven by luck. It was not because of my intellectual ability or my intelligence. It was primarily driven by luck. So that particular self-realization made me very humble. So that those 4 years in the stock market, that bull market, taught me the importance of humility. Okay. Then what happened? We had the big bear market in mid caps, small caps, and micro caps in India from January 2018 to March 2020, right? During these 27 months, I learned the importance of inculcating and incorporating a very robust and sound investment process. So now what, so the first 4 years taught me the importance of humility, and the next 27 months taught me the importance of having a very solid investment process in place. So now, so actually what had happened was, even though I'd made a lot of money in the previous bull market, but I did not derive any intellectual satisfaction from it because it was primarily driven by luck. It just made me very humble. But now, you know, in the upcoming bull market, this time around, now that I've built, now that I've used the, you know, previous bear market to build a very sound and robust investment process, now that I have that in place, this time around, when I create a lot of wealth, this time, you know, I'll derive a lot of intellectual satisfaction as well. So I would say these two experiences, you know, I've been very fortunate to experience both a very good bull market as well as a very difficult bear market as well. And both of them have taught me, you know, basically to be humble and respectful in the market, and to also be disciplined and have a very sound investment process. So this is, these are the two phases which have helped shape me into the investor that I am today, and I'm very thankful for the learnings.
I'm sure you are being humble here, and you know, we all feel like that. You know, we keep refining the process, and even, you know, if I see my journey every day, I feel, you know, that I can fine-tune my process in a better way and still improvise it over a period of time. And if we have that mindset, I think we keep on improving, and we feel that dearth of learning, and we go back to our learning principles and start reading more and imbibing more and learning from others' mistakes. So I think it's a journey, as you rightly said, and it never stops, I feel. You have to constantly keep innovating and see what market is evolving, how it is evolving. So it's a process, as you rightly said. But I got a very interesting point what you mentioned, that you are maintaining a journal, right? And not lot many investors do that. I've seen a lot of traders maintaining trading journal, but from the investing side of things, I've seen many few people maintaining this. So you have written also a detailed chapter on journaling in your book, and it is beneficial indeed to maintain a journal. I also do that, so I know that it is very beneficial, and we can learn about ourselves, right, when we reflect back to our journal and see our you know, investments. But it's easier said than done, right? So it is not very easy to maintain that. So is it possible for you to share an example how journaling has helped you improve your process?
Definitely, this has been very, very helpful. I spent $10 on purchasing a journal in late 2014, and I consider it to be one of the best value investments I've ever made. Since that day, I've been keeping track of my investing decisions and the subsequent developments in the journal. This has helped me a lot in learning about my thinking process at the time of making my past decisions. I receive a lot of valuable feedback, and I use it to correct my biases. I've also maintained a personal archive of the media commentary and investor behavior during various episodes of market panic from early 2015 till date. And I find it highly beneficial to refer to it whenever the market undergoes its periodic steep corrections. You see, human behavior in the markets has never really changed much over time. For
Yes.
instance, just a few months ago, there was a lot of doom and gloom prevalent among many investors across the world owing to the bear market crash that had happened. And suddenly, just now, you have the global stock markets in a state of euphoria,
Yes.
greed, and fear. They are, you know, omnipresent emotions in the market. And recency bias is all pervasive, and people tend to extrapolate recent trends into infinity as they assume them to be the new normal, until it is not, in a cyclical world. So maintaining a journal helps us, you know, behave in a calm and rational manner, you know, amid all the turbulence in the market, be it on the upside or the downside, and just helps us keep things in the right perspective.
Great. So all the young minds and investors listening to this podcast, I think this is a very good message which Gautam has gave us, in terms of learning from history and, the human emotions keep coming back and back again and again, right? So we have experienced this, seen this again and again. And what he has done is he has a treasure of all the past historical events that has occurred and demonstrated these kind of emotions. And he is constantly learning from that. So for all the listeners, the message is clear. You need to learn from history and be cognizant about these behaviors when they are turning up in the market. And rather than, reacting to it, you can actually, take advantage of those situations in best possible manner. So great, awesome, concept which you have just shared, Gautam. And again, as you mentioned, you keep on reading, listening to a lot of articles and resources online for, your learning as well as your growth in terms of investing and personal growth as well in terms of your mindset. So can you give us some online resources to our listeners in terms of how they can generate new stock ideas and how they can read good content from any of the sources? It could be Twitter, blogs, any reports which they should read.
Sure. I enjoy learning from the blog articles published by Morgan Housel, Safal Niveshak, Fundu Professor, Jana WordPress, Basic Investing and Microcap Club, among others. I also believe that Twitter is the best learning and networking university in the internet age. And it is a great medium to attract like-minded people into your fold by sharing content that you find personally meaningful. As regards the fund quarterly reports, I do not have any pre-decided list. I simply select the ones I come across that grab my interest and I start reading them. Because to me, it feels like an intellectual treasure hunt. You never know what hidden gems or new insights you will stumble upon when you begin reading a new book, a new blog post, a new research report, a new annual report, a new white paper, or a new investment newsletter, and start flipping through the pages.
Yes, thank you. So all listeners, again, as Gautam rightly said, he has shared a lot of resources and you can go through them. And you should also keep learning because you never know, as he rightly mentioned, one great idea can hit you and change your life. So just keep finding that one incremental new idea which is going to improve your life and your mindset and your thought process and make you a better person and better investor, right? So keep hunting and keep learning. Now, Gautam, you are author of this book, The Joys of Compounding, and I also know that you keep reading a lot of books, right? So among the books you have read, can you again share what are your favorite books which you would recommend for people to read and get knowledge out of it?
Well, there are many books that I've really enjoyed reading over the years, but if I just had to shortlist a few, I would include Poor Charlie's Almanac, a life-changing book for investors and non-investors alike. I would also include Seeking Wisdom by Peter Bevlin, which is the finest book I've ever read on multidisciplinary thinking, along with another book by the same author titled All I Want to Know Is Where I'm Going to Die, So I'll Never Go There. That is the best book ever written on the theme of inversion. And I would also recommend the Buffett Partnership Letters, the Berkshire Hathaway Shareholder Letters, and the Berkshire Hathaway Owner's Manual as a recommended reading for all investors.
Thank you, Gautam. So again, some of these things like letters by Berkshire Hathaway are available free. You can go and download from the websites. And other books he mentioned, some of them also, I have read it and these are like awesome books. You should definitely invest in these books and, take your journey to the next level. So thank you again, Gautam, for sharing those books. And in terms of the last closing thought for our audience, what would be that one last biggest message which you want to give to the listeners of this podcast?
Actually, there are more than one. I would like to share some life principles whose importance I've come to appreciate more and more with the passage of time. The best investment you can make is an investment in yourself. The more you learn, the more you earn. An investment in knowledge pays the best interest. Live life as per the inner scorecard. Self-respect beats social approval every time. Associate with and learn from people better than you, and you cannot help but improve. Control over your personal time is much more valuable than high absolute levels of money. A long and healthy life is the key to compounding. So eat less junk food and sugar, get sufficient sleep, and engage in regular moderate exercise. Be kind, humble, and empathetic to others, and always help people unconditionally without expecting anything in return. Always be thankful to God, your parents, and those who helped you during your difficult times. Never underestimate the role of luck in every sphere of life. Lastly, I would like to share my late maternal grandfather's words of wisdom to me during my childhood years, which had a lasting impact on my life. There is no alternative to hard work.
Yes. Thank you, Gautam. These are like real gems which you have shared with all the podcast listeners, and not only compounding in investing, but you shared the wisdom around, you know, how to compound in your personal life, how to live a healthy lifestyle. And really grateful for all these thoughts and your time for sharing all this wisdom and learning which you have accumulated over so many years. You have just, you know, given those, you know, power pills to the audience for digesting these learnings and take that learnings to that next level in their own life. So thank you so much, Gautam, for taking this time. And again, for people who want to go through Gautam's book, you know, I'll be sharing the link below. He has written this wonderful book, The Joys of Compounding, where he's, you know, pouring all these learnings in a very, very detailed manner. And from personally, from my reading, I would highly recommend it to all of you to go through that book. Thank you again, Gautam.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So all the listeners, thank you very much to tuning this podcast, and we'll keep, you know, engaging with a lot of people who have achieved their financial freedom, and we'll try to connect their messages to you so that you can also compound in your life. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.